the BAL Files, the ultimate Ravens podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
Time for us to talk some Ravens, and to do that, we bring in from BaltimoreBeatdown.com, Matt Cohen joins us to talk Ravens. You find him on Twitter at MDC_99. As we look back at week one, Matt, obviously every team wants to start 1-0, and we'll talk specifically about some of the different position groups or how they perform, but give me just your overall thoughts on Baltimore picking up the win in week one.
Well, I have to say that the defense was incredibly impressive, holding that Bills offense, which I think we all know is very talented with Tyrod Taylor, Sean McCoy, and Sammy Watkins, holding them to only 7 points, highlighted by a lot of pressure in the backfield. Only two sacks came from it, but I think that their ability to come up and stop the run and get Tyrod Taylor out of the pocket was really huge in getting the win.
When you look at the performance of the running game, let's start with the running backs here and get specific on it. We know that they kind of played a little shell game with Justin Forsett. First, he wasn't on the team, then he was on the team, but truly they wanted him there. He winds up with 10 carries. Terrence West is there with 12. Do you think that this is truly going to be running back by committee all year long, or do you think ultimately somebody emerges, maybe even Dixon, as the lead back with everybody else taking a back seat?
Yeah, I actually was going to say to keep an eye out for Kenneth Dixon. I think until Dixon comes back, which is maybe around week four, week five, somewhere in that timeline, I think it's going to be a committee between West and Forsett. Who's going to take the lead role from that, if either of them, I think is purely unknown at this point. The fact that West had more carries than Forsett, I don't think it means much because it was only two more carries. But Forsett had 9 more yards than West. West is definitely the goal line guy, I think, no matter what happens. But I would say, based on the level of carries in the preseason, Dixon may have inched himself a little bit above West in the third preseason game before he hurt himself. And the coaches really love him. I think he will come back and get a pretty prominent role in the backfield and maybe take over as the lead guy. If not this year, I think definitely next year.
Obviously, Flacco comes out. Great to see him for Ravens fans out on the field after dealing with the injury and all of that. Not exactly statistically a huge number. Matt, when you look at that, do you credit that to trying to kind of get things going offensively, or was the Buffalo defense causing a lot of that?
I think you can give some of it to getting it going offensively, but Ronald Darby and Stephen Gilmore are some of the best corners in the NFL, and it's really hard to, especially with the Ravens offensive line not playing particularly well. Flacco didn't have as much time as I'm sure he would have liked to get the ball off, especially with the top two options that he had typically being covered by two of the best corners in the NFL. Obviously, if the offensive line had played a bit better, there were 4 sacks allowed in the game, it maybe would have helped, but I don't think it would have dramatically made a difference because that Bills defense is very, very good.
We saw Flacco spread it out to 10 different receivers total in the game. Do you think that's going to be the norm? Are we going to see that every week?
Yes, the Ravens wide receiver depth is very, very good. And same thing at tight end. They really look like to incorporate all of those guys into the offense because all of them bring something different to the table. I think as the season progresses, though, you'll see more from Kamar Aiken, who only had 2 catches on 2 targets. He was the Ravens' number one receiver last year. So he will, I think, definitely see an increased workload. The interesting thing, though, that I thought was that Steve Smith had 9 targets, but only a total of 19 yards with 5 catches. That will probably continue. Hopefully he'll be able to to produce more than 19 yards on five catches. But I would definitely think that Steve Smith is still the go-to guy in this offense.
What did you see? You brought up the offensive line. What about over on the defensive side of things? You know, anytime you can hold a team to 7 points, you know your defense is doing something right. So when you see the Ravens defense, I think so often when folks think about the Baltimore Ravens and defense, they think back to 2000. But what is it that made the performance of this defense in your eyes so special in week one?
Well, I don't think this is by any means the 2000 defense, but Eric Weddle and Charisse Wright were two guys that were really essential in creating the defensive stand that they had the entire game. Charisse Wright was honestly dominant with he had 11 tackles in the game, which is amazing considering he got slammed in the preseason a lot because he missed tackles. And then Eric Weddle did a great job of kind of leading the defense, providing that veteran experience. But he also did a great job of coming up on the run. He made, I forget what the stat was, but on Pro Football Focus, they said he had some incredible tackle percentage from inside eight yards. Again, I don't remember what the exact number was from that article. But he was really just did a fantastic job of being the enforcer that the team has been looking for a long time. They didn't get the turnovers that they, I'm sure, had wanted and still are lacking from last season. But that will come with time. I think that the Bills offense, you don't see many turnovers from them. Maybe interceptions from Tyrod Taylor. But beyond that, you don't see many turnovers from them. We'll see what happens this week versus Cleveland if they'll find turnovers against whoever they choose to start at quarterback, maybe Cody Kessler.
Well, and I was going to bring that up. I mean, obviously, when you hold Buffalo to just 7 points, I can't help but, Matt, we got to know that this Baltimore defense is just licking their chops to take on Cleveland, especially yeah. Knowing that now they've got to go on to a quarterback they weren't planning on. And go up against a team that, frankly, a lot of people thought would look better against Philadelphia and just flat out didn't. So I've got to think this defense is really excited about the fact that not only is it a divisional matchup, but it's a matchup where they may be able to really feast on this Browns offense.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually I have about five or six different fantasy teams, and I have Baltimore defense as my top waiver claim this week on every single one of them. I'm incredibly excited for what this matchup has to hold. I think that the turnovers that they've been lacking for so long will show up. I personally think that Cody Kessler will start this game for Cleveland. That could be wrong. I don't know what their decision is going to be. But I think missing RG3 and having another Cleveland quarterback, shocking that sentence has to be said at this point. It's going to be interesting to see how they fare. And their wide receivers, I think, are more talented than people give them credit for. But we'll have to see. I think it's too early to make a call because maybe whoever they start has a breakout game. I don't think there's, at this point, a way to predict Cleveland. They're very unpredictable.
And then on the offensive side of things, again, if a rookie quarterback in Carson Wentz can get going, this could be a game that really allows Joe Flacco in this offense to try to put a little bit of a stamp on the early part of the year. And again, it's a divisional game. So offensively, what are you going to be looking for them to do against the Browns defense?
Well, I'm going to be definitely keying in on the offensive line, seeing if they are able to fare better than they did against Buffalo. And if they're able to perform better, then I think it's very plausible to see a major uptick in the offensive production. I don't know if that means, 30, 40 points, and I don't think that it does. I would definitely look to see – I would definitely key in on Steve Smith and Mike Wallace again for this game, and maybe even Breshad Perriman as the key passing target. Cleveland has, I would say, a better front than people give them credit for. Same thing, as I said, with the wide receivers, but their secondary is atrocious. And I would look for Flacco's big arm to be hitting Mike Wallace, hitting Breshad Perriman, using Steve Smith's ability in the slot and down under and even out wide at the young age of 37 or 38 or whatever he is now. Overall, I would be thinking, look for a huge uptick in the passing game, hopefully an uptick in the running game, which was good but not great. It could definitely be better, though, and I would think that against Cleveland's defense, we'll have an opportunity to perform better.
Great stuff from Matt Cohen, writing for BaltimoreBeatdown.com. You follow him on Twitter at MDC_99. All things Ravens there with Matt. Matt, really appreciate the time. Thank you for that, and enjoy week two.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Stick around. Matt's done. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17-35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. We're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good, but we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road, and it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team, but they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense, but I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it, because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show Game Day First for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. You had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, Coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues they're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play, or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd, and, oh, by the way, against a Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's Overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake here.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.